This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This is the Wealth Ability Show with Tom Wheelwright. Way more money, way less taxes.
There has been so much dialogue lately about how the rich don't pay taxes, how there's all these loopholes in the law. And, you know, the question is it the rich are cheating? What's going on? Are they really not paying taxes? What's really going on here? Because we've got, you know, we've got one side that says, wait a minute, we need to keep increasing taxes on the rich. We've got another side that says, no, we need to decrease taxes. And it's a big part of the election right now on top of everything else. So I thought it'd be valuable to bring somebody on who's actually been through this struggle of paying a lot of tax and then finding out that, wait a minute, here's how the law actually works. So I've asked Brad Sumrock, who's a longtime client of mine, and asked him to come on and really kind of walk through his journey and what kind of led him to it, what happened to cause him to change the way he looked at taxes, and really just have a discussion about, are these loopholes? Are they incentives? What are they? And Brad, it's such a privilege and honor to have you on our show today.
I'm so excited, Tom. Thank you.
So Brad, if you could, give us a little bit of your background and what you do.
Yeah, so like so many others, I started with doing everything right, going to school, studying hard, getting good grades, got a degree, and went back and got a second degree, a master's degree, and again, did everything right, but wasn't where I wanted to be financially, and then suffered, you know, a layoff and a job loss in my 30s. And my whole life trajectory changed when I read our mutual friend's book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And he talked about, you know, the cash flow quadrant and being an entrepreneur and an investor, you know, a business owner and an investor. And I learned to be self-employed and to be an employee. And so I had a good job, a good degree, a good education, but it occurred to me that my financial future wasn't secure. And so I sought out education and got into real estate investing.
So what type of real estate investing have you been doing? How long have you been doing it now?
Yeah, so I started right away in multifamily investing. And my first property that I acquired back in 2002 was a 32-unit apartment building. And since then, I have invested with my own money. I've invested as a syndicator on the general partnership side. And I've invested as a passive investor in other people's syndications. I've invested in over 10,000 apartment units. And currently, I'm in approximately, don't quote me on the exact number, but about 37 syndications right now, totaling over 7,000 units.
Okay, awesome. Thanks. So kind of talk about your tax journey, if you will, because I remember when I met you, you were paying a whole lot of tax. So kind of what happened there to cause you to actually look at, well, maybe is there something different you could do from a tax standpoint?
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, when I did my first few apartment purchases, you know, I had a CPA, an accountant on my team that prepared my tax returns. And I recall being advised, you know, not to do things like cost segregation studies. And so I didn't do those things. And so, and I'm sure we could talk about that, but you know, that was number one, is I wasn't aware of the benefits of cost segregation studies. And then number two, Tom, as you know, I'm also in the real estate education business. And so as I progressed as an apartment investor and rolling out and growing our education platform, our income started to go up and, you know, our taxes started to go up. And I remember a time where I actually had a goal to pay over $1 million in tax because I just felt that came with the territory. And there was just so much I didn't know. And so once I met you and I got educated on legal strategies to legally reduce tax, I was able to do that. So we did more deals, and you know, we continued to grow our education platform. And within a short amount of time, I was able to, you know, substantially reduce our federal income tax from close to $1 million down to, you know, there were a few years there where it was actually zero.
I've heard a lot of accountants say that. Well, you know, it's a good thing, right? You're paying a lot of tax. That means you made a lot of money. You don't pay a lot of tax without making a lot of money. So what changed? What caused you to actually change your thoughts about that?
Well, I think what changed was, you know, just my own awareness of the laws, you know, and you've taught me that, like it was about getting educated and being and meeting other people that were actually in similar businesses as me, making the same or more money and paying less tax. And so I figured, like, hey, like many people, you know, maybe Tom at first, maybe I was skeptical and I was like, could I really do this? But I learned, and you helped me with that, because I'm not an accountant, you know, I'm not a lawyer, I'm a lay person, I'm a business owner, I'm an investor. But I learned that that I needed to have more competent people on my team to advise me on these nuances. And so when I made that decision, you know, I was able to, you know, reduce my tax.
So what was it? Let's go to that specific situation.
Yeah,
I remember that deal very well. What was the trigger? What was it that you had to do differently in order to reduce your taxes?
Well, one is we started doing cost segregation studies, and I'm you know, we could dive into that, you know, if you want. And two is I started to have more direct ownership in the apartment transactions. You know, I would syndicate deals in the past and put some money in, but I learned that the depreciation follows the capital investment. And so, you know, Tom, as we started having higher income, whether it's from, you know, apartment income, capital gain income from selling apartments, you know, income from our education platform, that's all taxable income. Okay. And again, I correct me if I'm wrong here, because Tom, you're the expert. I'm the disciple in this field. But I learned that there were ways for me to offset some of that income. And one of the ways that you taught me was having more ownership, more capital investments in these apartment deals. And so starting in 2018, we continued syndicating deals, but I started putting more money in them. And so the more money you invest, the more depreciation you get.
Let's talk for a little bit about depreciation, because tax-free wealth, I call it the magic of depreciation. From your standpoint, how does depreciation work? And and when you talk about a cost segregation, if you would, in your terms, the way you understand it, how does that work?
Yeah, so cost segregation is like if you identify a commercial property, say in my case, an apartment building, it depreciates over 27 and a half years, which means that like every year the government says, hey, due to the wear and tear that, you know, you could take a loss of about 3.6%, which over 27 years would go to whatever you paid for it minus the land down to zero. And most people could understand what depreciation is when they think of like buying a car and driving it off the lot and it going down in value. But not to be confused, market value is different than, you know, the value that you have on your tax returns. Okay. And you could probably explain that better than me. So cost segregation, what that does is the engineer or the accounting firm, they go into the property and they actually identify things in that apartment building that depreciate faster than 27 years. So there are things that depreciate over 5 years and 15 years and 27. And so when they go in for 27.5, excuse me. So when they're done with that study, the cost segregation enables the investors to have more depreciation faster than if they did it through a straight line, like 27 and a half year process, taking 3.6% a year.
I'm very impressed, Brad. That was really, really well said. And you're a great student. I love that. I love that's exactly what happens right now. But in 2017, of course, we got what we call bonus depreciation, which actually put even more of that tax benefit. It wasn't 5 years and 15 years anymore. Now, all of a sudden, we got 100% of those items, right? And how did that impact you? Let's talk about that first deal you did, because I remember very clearly, I saw that you were, and thanks for being willing to share this, by the way, I saw that you were doing a lot of deals where other people were putting the money, and you'd put in a little bit, but you weren't doing your own deals. And so what was happening is you were making money on their money, which is, you know, Robert Kiyosaki talks about that, other people's money. But you weren't making money on your own money. So your own money was going somewhere else. And so that first deal, I remember very well, you went and you put money into your own deal and funded that. And so instead of getting a little bit of depreciation, you got a lot of depreciation. But I also seem to recall, Brad, that you were a little hesitant going into that deal. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So look, like you said, I've always put money into deals. I've never done a deal where I didn't put money, you know, but in the beginning I had less money, but I always put 50, 100, maybe a little bit more, 200 into these deals. And then I would get my pro rata share of depreciation. And then as our income started to grow, our taxable income started to grow, or maybe would sell a deal and I'd get, you know, part of the promote or the upside, which is common and, you know, for general partners to do, we would have, you know, more money. And all that gain was taxable. And so what I learned from you, Tom, is like, I remember that first deal where I put in a lot of my own money, and roughly it was like for every dollar invested, we actually had a $1 depreciation loss. So like in one example, I put in, you know, $2.6 million into one transaction. And that same calendar year, I remember looking at my Schedule K-1 and I had roughly a $2.6 million depreciation assigned to my ownership. And so, I was hesitant like everybody else. Like I learned about asset allocation and diversification and was hesitant to put that much money into one deal, because here's the thing, I've been syndicating and investing in apartments for 22 years. And overall, it's been a very, you know, lucrative business. And that's why I'm passionate about teaching it. But look, there's always been risk. There still is risk. That risk could be mitigated through, you know, having experienced teams and experienced, you know, working with experienced people and investing in a great market, you know, as opposed to a not so great of a market. And it could also be influenced by the market cycle like it is today. But at the end of the day, any given deal has the potential for not performing. So, you know, I was hesitant to be like, wow, I'm going to put like, you know, seven figures into this deal. And like, what if this is the deal that doesn't go well?
So I got to ask you the question. And please just be honest with everybody on this one. Would you have done this deal had it not been for the tax benefits? That first. Well,
yeah. So look, in hindsight, I would say absolutely, because the deal turned out to be amazingly well and we exceeded the projected returns, you know, but at the time it was like 2017, 2018. And look, I'm always a student. I learn and listen from a lot of people. And, you know, I have my own experiences, number one. And number two, there were people that I respect that were saying, hey, like we're at the top of the market. Now's not the right time. And there were other people that were very bullish in the industry. So like, yeah, in that moment of time, I was hesitant and to do the deal, but the tax benefit made me from being like lukewarm and maybe doing the deal and maybe not doing the deal to like, this is a no-brainer.
I like that. So it wasn't the reason for the doing the deal, but it was maybe what put you over the top on pulling the trigger on the deal.
Right, because there's a pre-tax return and a post-tax return. And in this case, you know, the after-tax return was significantly higher, taking into account the depreciation and how that would impact the taxes I would pay that calendar year. So like, you know, the returns before the depreciation were okay. you know, and the returns after the depreciation were more than okay. So it really pushed me over the edge. And Tom, the good thing about that is it wasn't just good for me and the investors. We transformed that property. I mean, imagine having 124 units of working class people, you know, making between 40 to 50,000 a year that maybe had an experience of a previous owner not really taking care of the property. And we came in and, you know, with the equity and the loan dollars, we uplifted the property, the amenities, the units, and really made it a place that not only we were proud to own, but they were proud to call home.
That's awesome. Let me ask you this. So you teach people how to do multifamily investing. What, in your experience, when you look at all the multifamily investors and the syndicators that you've taught and everybody else, what factor does the tax side of it play in people getting into this or doing this? Is it a neutral factor, positive factor? Clearly not a negative factor, but what kind of a factor does it play at all?
Well, at worst, it's neutral, and at best, it's very high. And it depends on like the individual. So, you know, Tom, you could explain this better than me. Like everybody benefits from depreciation, but not everybody benefits the same time frame, right? So it depends on your, you know, your tax filing status and are you a active real estate professional or aren't you, and all those nuances. But, you know, here's what I say, if I had to go upstream from that, there's three or four financial reasons why we invest in apartment buildings. Okay, one, especially, you know, at a time that we've experienced a few years ago, where if you have your money in the bank, you're actually losing money with inflation. You're making 0 or 1%. Now it's higher, 4 or 5%. But back then it was 0 to 1%, and inflation was higher than that. So one thing we like about apartments is just preservation of capital, and I don't think a lot of people talk about that too much. But two, the ways we actually make a profit is there's cash flow. So we look for cash flowing assets. Number two is we look for appreciation, you know, with a proven appreciation model, with proven value add upgrades, proven management efficiencies, looking at rental, comparable properties next to the property and seeing like, hey, if they've done these renovations and they are getting, you know, higher occupancies as a result of that, it's likely that we could do it too. And so we're looking at, you know, cash flow and upside potential. And then the third reason is the tax savings. And just to be clear, usually my primary focus for doing multifamily is cash flow and upside. And there have been deals where in those moments of time where tax savings was really important to me. And I see that with my clients. Some are very, you know, high income earners, and they really need the depreciation. So I've had people come to me saying, Brad, like, hey, it's toward the end of the year, and I realized I'm going to have a big tax bill due next year. So I'd like to invest some money and get the depreciation loss. So for some people, taxes, you know, is very high on the list. And for others, it's less high, but it's still important. So I don't think it's ever really been completely neutral, but it's either maybe like on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe somewhere between like a 6 to a 9 for people.
Interesting. So over the last 10, 15 years, there have been a lot of new development. We've had a housing shortage for a long time. I think that's, you know, that's been well documented in the press, and still have some housing shortage. But there's been a huge amount of development done as well. So the housing shortage, not what it was 10 years ago. I'm curious, what do you think the impact of the tax incentives has had on that development?
Well, I don't know, because, well, number one, I don't do multifamily development. It's a completely different business. But what occurs for me is like, look, when you buy land, which is what happens in a development project, you buy the land and then you get the drawings and you develop the land. Like buying land has no depreciation. And if it does, it may come a lot slower along, like, okay, you buy the land and you develop the land and get a construction loan. And then at some point you actually have, you know, improved property that is now depreciable. So from a tax perspective, it occurs to me that it's much better to buy an existing building where, like, look, in multifamily, you know, when we're buying B and C class workforce housing, it's common for 80 to 90% of the purchase price to be allocated to the building and only 10 or 20% to the land. Whereas a development project, it's probably going to be, you know, 100% land, or maybe, you know, less than 100% land if there's things that are developing on the land that are depreciable. So from a tax perspective, buying existing buildings is much better. I don't know if that answered your question or not, but.
No, I'm a little confused. So obviously whether you buy an existing building, you buy a new, or you build a new building, the depreciation is exactly the same. Okay. So it's whatever the cost is, you're still going to get, the contents are still going to be 5 years. The land improvement is still going to be 15 years. And you probably have more of those in a new building, frankly, than you even do on an old building. So my experience has been they're about the same. My question is the depreciation, the bonus depreciation was put into effect in 2017. This was part of the Trump tax bill. And it's now phasing down. And so there's the question really is, as it phases down, do you think were it to phase out completely, that would have an impact on how much on the supply of housing?
I see. Yeah, I misunderstood the question. I was comparing like buying an existing building to like a piece of land and then building later. But yes, now that I understand the question, look, a lot of investors want tax benefits. And so with bonus depreciation phasing out, there's obviously less tax benefit. So I do think it's going to have an impact on housing, on development, on solving the housing crisis.
Yeah. So that's my question is, I mean, these rules, actually Ronald Reagan, I'm old enough to know this. I've been in the profession that long. Ronald Reagan actually was the first one to stimulate housing through depreciation, through tax incentives. And so that came in 1981, and here we are 2024. So that was over 40 years ago. Why do you think the government does that? I mean, why would Reagan do it? Why would then, we continue to get these tax benefits? And, you know, like even Joe Biden, he could have taken them away, but even in his Build Back Better plan, he wasn't taking away the bonus depreciation. Why do you think that is as a real professional in the real estate business?
Well, it occurs to me that we still have a shortage of housing. And if I look at the statistics going back to 1981, I mean, 1981, I was still in high school, but, you know, look, the government, and Tom, you taught me a lot of this. The government uses tax policy to incentivize us as citizens to do things that they would prefer us to do. So whether it's housing, they will give us tax incentives for housing. They've also done it with, you know, energy or, you know, whatever, other things that you know better than me. So I'll stick to housing. So I think they've done it to encourage investors to invest in housing. And if you look at the numbers today in the last decade, and certainly in 2017, like we have more households being formed than we have existing single family and multifamily housing units. And so we need more of them.
Okay, thank you. So let's go back to your personal experience. So clearly this is not a loophole. This is something that's actually identified by the tax law. It's here, by the way, it's true in most countries have some type of tax benefit for like this, for development, real estate development. Personally, I have two questions for you. It's not cheap to hire a good CPA. that, you know, there's a cost to that. When you look at your return on investment to getting educated and hiring a good person on your team, how would you compare that, for example, to return on investment on real estate?
Well, I always share with people that investing in real estate, what occurs for me is this: the second best financial investment I've ever made. And the first best is investing in, I would say it in a couple of different ways, but I would say investing in your own education, you know, investing in things or people or organizations or communities. That's why I say things that give you more education that enable you to make better business decisions. And I've done that. Like, you know, Tom, it's no secret. Like, I had a CPA before I worked with you. And then I engaged with you, and I invested more money to work with you than I did with the other firm. But I have, you know, not only have I learned a lot, I have implemented what I've learned and saved a lot of money. And that investment has paid a higher return than the investment I've made in real estate, which has also been a great return. But investing in the right team or the right experienced person, in my experience, will provide the highest return.
So thank you. So from your knowledge, and I know you talk about this with your students, do you have to do big deals, or is this like something that's available to the average person? Do only rich people get this benefit?
Well, I don't think so, because I think anybody that buys housing units will have these benefits.
Yeah, and that's the point, is that, you know, whether you're buying a single family home to rent out, a duplex, fourplex, doesn't matter. The government doesn't care. The government is agnostic about your income. What the government cares about is, let's build housing, and whether it's a fourplex we're building or whether it's multifamily. Because when you're dealing in used housing, but because you're dealing in used housing, new housing gets built. I don't think those two are separable.
Right.
The used housing market and the new housing market. Is that fair?
I think it's fair. Yeah.
So the other question I have is, because I know that you have a charity down in Central America, and you're, you know, originally had this goal of paying tax of $1 million or making $1 million. But so with all those savings, what have you done with the money?
Well, with some of those savings, we have, I mean, look, when I grew up, money was scarce. And so it never occurred to me to contribute money to charity, even when I was making, you know, $10,000 a month in corporate America. Somehow money was always scarce. I learned to spend close to what I earned. But as we got, you know, more real estate and develop streams of income through our businesses, we became, you know, more financially prosperous. And then when you helped us save on taxes, this is when it first occurred to me that, like, wow, like, we have an obligation to do something. And so we got behind a charity somewhere back in like 2018, when we started to dramatically reduce our taxes. And it provides wheelchairs for people in need. And there's a lot of reasons I got behind this specific charity that I don't need to go into, but we have since contributed over $1 million to charity. And we, you know, have made others aware as well. And so not only do we contribute it, people in our community have also embraced, you know, contributing some of their, call it prosperity and tax savings, into more charitable organizations around the country and outside of the country.
So besides the charity, the charity for your investors in particular, and your students, how important is the tax savings to them investing more? In other words, do you find that they're taking the tax savings and investing it in more property?
Yes, if I understand your question.
So they're not just taking that money and spending it in the economy, is what I'm saying, is they are actually, okay, now this is important because now we can invest more, and the more we invest, the more tax benefits we get. And so it becomes a cycle where they continually invest more because they have
Sure.
more to invest.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe yeah, it's clear now. Yeah. So, it occurs to me that the better the tax savings results in more and continued investing in current and future deals, current and future opportunities that will continue to provide, tax savings. And then back to your other question, is these tax savings may phase out as a result of the 2017 tax law that is designed, by the way, is designed to phase out over a 5-year period. That now there may be some individuals that invest less.
Interesting. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners? This has been great, Brad. Thank you.
Well, I mean, look, I have a lot. I'm never at a loss for words, Tom, but well, look, I would just say, some people look at investing in yourself as a cost. Hey, it costs X $100 or X $1,000 to have this person on my team, or to learn from this person, or to work with this person. And I would just suggest that you look at it as an investment. And if there's an ROI, like, look here, look, like if you could invest $10,000, Tom, or $50,000, Tom, and get a 10x ROI on that with a high degree of certainty, would you do it? And for me, the answer is yes.
I like it. So share where we could find out more about what you do and the financial education you provide.
Yeah, so look, I'm on social media as Brad Sumrock, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Sumrok, website bradsumrock.com. And Tom, as you know, we have free content, free home study course. We have a $100 home study course that's 6 or 7 hours of some of my best content. And we do, in-person training events, and I have one coming up. So that would be the best way for people to really learn what it is that I do, which is my proven apartment investing framework, covering everything from like understanding the numbers and the financial projections, to finding and analyzing deals, to getting the debt and the equity, to closing, to managing everything and everything in between. So that would be the best way if somebody is really interested to learn what it is I do.
Awesome. Thank you. So one of the things I will tell everybody is that when I first met, when I first went to one of Brad's conferences, because I speak at your conferences, this is no secret. And, but I remember the first one I went to, and what I was impressed with was, and you didn't share this yet, is that Brad, you're an engineer by training. And so there were a lot of details. And one of the things that I found with a lot of, seminar type education is there. I frequently find there's not a lot of there. And what I liked about yours is I find that it's very specific, and you get into the numbers. You're showing spreadsheets. You're showing tools. And I just want to say thank you, because I appreciate that as an accountant who likes numbers, who likes to see the bottom line of things. I appreciate that you're not just sharing concepts, but you're actually sharing the actual details with your students, because I think that's important. They need to know not just why to do it, but they need to know how to do it.
Thank you, and I concur, and that's why I do it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. And so for all of you out there, just remember, first of all, as Brad says, these are not mistakes that the government made in these tax incentives. They're incentives that they did on purpose. I read a quote not too long ago that the low-income housing credit is the single biggest incentive for people to build low-income housing. It's the single most important part, single most government program for low-income housing is to actually provide that credit. We didn't talk about that credit. We talked about depreciation. But my point is that these are things that are available to everyone. It does take time because you don't take it on lightly. You've got to always look at the investment deal first, look at taxes second or third. Just don't forget taxes. They're an important component. They will increase your rate of return, or if you don't get a tax benefit, they could decrease your rate of return, right? Because taxes can be a drag. And that's why we talk about things like this on this show, because we talk about way more money and way less tax. Well, why do we do that? Well, the reason is A, first, it's your financial freedom we're talking about. It's your financial future. And we're big fans. Brad and I are big fans of people taking control of their own financial future, right, Brad? I mean, you felt like when you were an employee that you didn't have that control. Is that fair?
Correct. Absolutely.
And I think that's why Rich Dad Poor Dad's the most popular financial book on the planet, is because it's giving people control over something they felt like they had no control. And that's why tax-free wealth has been so popular, is because it's giving you a choice. Do you do the things the government wants you to do, or do you, you know, go along your merry way and just pay high taxes? It is a choice. And it's a choice we make when we get in, when we get financially educated, when we get good team members around us. It's a choice. You know, are we going to go to that seminar? Are we going to read that book? Are we going to listen to that podcast? What are we going to do to improve ourselves, take control, or are we going to give up control to somebody else? And I'll leave it at that. That's what the Wealth Ability Show is all about. It's about you taking control of your life, of your finances, so that you do end up paying way more money. So you do end up getting way more money and paying way less tax. Thanks, Brad. Thanks, everyone.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom. And everybody out there, thank you.
You've been listening to The Wealth Ability Show with Tom Wheelwright. Way more money, way less taxes. To learn more, go to wealthability.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.